Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, September 22nd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Parliament resumed sitting today following last week's fracas, during which President Mugabe delivered a wrong speech, with parliamentarians calling for seriousness from members of the executive and backbenchers in dealing with government matters.
The President's speech during the third session of Parliament, in my own opinion, Mr. Speaker, failed to guide the legislative arm towards sustainable development.
Pope Francis, the head of the Catholic Church, arrives in the United States tonight for a historic 5 days of events in three cities that is being anticipated by Catholics and non-Catholics alike.
It is very meaningful. I've been talking to a lot of Zimbabweans who are very, very excited about the Pope coming. As I said, the Pope is responsible for all the faithful in all the countries of the world.
And the government's plan to introduce a law prohibiting public smoking is received with mixed feelings. These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The National Assembly resumed sitting today following last week's fracas, during which President Robert Mugabe delivered a wrong speech at the official opening of the third session of the 8th Parliament, with lawmakers from the ruling ZANU-PF moving the customary motion of thanking the president for his speech, and opposition lawmakers saying the speech lacked in depth. Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
ZANU-PF lawmaker William Mutomba moved a motion to thank Mr. Mugabe for the correct speech that was tabled after his gaffe last Tuesday, calling for seriousness amongst his peers to ensure all 21 bills proposed by the president are passed into law. These include the Public Health, Zimbabwe Standards Regulatory Authority, State Procurement, and General Laws Amendment Bills. Mutomba said it was disappointing that Parliament had not disposed any bills at all, adding it is imperative that Parliament takes seriously its role of enacting laws for the country. For example, he said it was worrying that for the 24 bills that were set for the first session, only 12 were brought to Parliament, while in the second session, only 8 of the expected 19 bills were dealt with. The third session is scheduled to deal with 21 bills, and Mutomba says it's time for lawmakers and members of the executive to take the business of the House seriously. Fellow ZANU-PF lawmakers like Melody Tuone Dziva commended Mr. Mugabe for his speech and efforts to revive the economy, especially his bid to deal with corruption. But opposition lawmakers like Tokozani Kupe said, with the majority of the people wallowing in poverty and failing to make ends meet, Mr. Mugabe should have outlined ways and legislation through which he hopes to revive the economy and provide jobs for the people.
Mr. Speaker, say that the President's speech during the third session of Parliament, in my own opinion, Mr. Speaker, say, failed to guide the legislative arm towards sustainable development. The President's speech for me, Mr. Speaker, say, failed to deal with issues that reflect the concerns of the people. Mr. Speaker, say, the President's speech failed to raise issues in view of hopes, expectations, and aspirations of the people of Zimbabwe.
Meanwhile, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa introduced a bill today that will amend the Banking, Deposit Protection, Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, and the Troubled Financial Institutions Acts to provide for matters connected or incidental to the 4 acts. The bill was referred to the Parliamentary Legal Committee. In another story, French Ambassador to Zimbabwe Laurent Delahousse today welcomed to Harare 6 Zimbabwean cyclists on a mission to raise awareness on climate change across the African continent ahead of the World Conference of Climate Change to be held in France later this year. Delahousse said, a victim of the climate, Zimbabwe needed to act as time is running out.
It is very important to do it today, because every day is a lost day and the temperature on the planet is rising. And we have no alternative. As the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has put it, there is no plan B because there is no planet B.
Thomas Klassen, captain of the cyclists, who took off from Plumtree 2 weeks ago, said the journey across the continent is tough, just as climate change is.
It's not easy, but it's a challenge. And I believe that climate change is challenging our lives every day.
The cyclists will pass through 9 countries, including Mozambique, where they kicked off, and end in Nairobi, Kenya. A group of Africans will deliver a petition at the Paris meeting calling for fair and strong climate change actions to be adopted by world leaders to mitigate climate change and reduce global warming to well below 1.5 degrees. They want rich nations responsible for polluting the world to scale up their contributions to fighting climate change and to help poor countries to adapt to climate change, among other demands. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Pope Francis, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, arrives in the United States tonight for 5 days of events in 3 cities. His first stop on the multi-city tour will be the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where he will be met by President Barack Obama when he lands at Joint Base Andrews just outside D.C. From there, he'll participate in a welcoming ceremony at the White House, canonize Junipero Serra at the National Basilica Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, and address a joint session of Congress. The pontiff will then head off to New York and Philadelphia, where he'll speak at the September 11 memorial and conduct mass at the world meetings of the families respectively. Studio 7's Joseph Njanji sought out members of the Catholic community in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, to find out their views on issues affecting the church in the country and their thoughts on how these could be dealt with under Pope Francis's leadership.
30-year-old John Mufundisi of Bulawayo is ecstatic about Pope Francis, his message and reforms of the traditional Catholic Church as we know it. Mufundisi, who was born into a devout Catholic family but deserted since he did not agree with his tough doctrine, for instance, in the case of celibacy, when stories doing the round in the communities where that priest were either abusing young boys or having affairs with married women, says he may decide to come back to the church as the prodigal son if the reforms are effected. Pope Francis recently announced one of the most significant reforms of his papacy, how Catholics can nullify a marriage. The changes are radical. He was quoted saying, "Who am I to judge?" when asked about a Vatican Monsignor who allegedly had a gay lover in his past. His message has been all-embracing, asking the Catholic Church and the world to be tolerant of those with differing views. While traditional Catholics are at odds with some of the Pope's intended reforms, Mufundisi says that's the way to go. Mufundisi, who used to attend Mass at St. Bernard's Parish in Pumula, says he previously had been disillusioned by the Church's failure to evolve, especially holding on to what he says are unrealistic celibacy laws resulting in sex scandals engulfing the church.
Because as we know, they are not allowed to get married. They end up leading double lives, you know. In the end, you see that ships that are following the leaders who are lost themselves.
The Catholic Church in Zimbabwe has had its fair share of sex scandals, with the most prominent being that which involved the former Archbishop of Bulawayo, Dr. Pius Ali Kumvundla Ncube, back in 2007. While Ncube's case may have received widespread media coverage because of his vocal opposition to President Robert Mugabe's rule, there have been quite a number of reported cases of sexual misconduct involving Catholic priests. The celibacy of Roman Catholic priests is an issue that Pope Francis wrote about back when he was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires in his book titled On Heaven and Earth. But while he commented that celibacy, and I quote, "is a matter of discipline, not of faith, it can change," end of quote, he added that he was, for the moment, in favor of maintaining celibacy with all its pros and cons. Pope Francis has, since he became pontiff, introduced a lot of changes in the Catholic Church that have won him both admiration and much criticism. One thing that Nobuhlenleya believes the pontiff should encourage is embracing new ways of worship that will stop the youth from quitting the Catholic Church to join prophet-led Pentecostal churches that have mushroomed all over the country.
I think we have to move with the times because a lot of our youth have moved to Pentecostal churches which offer very lively music and at the same time accompanied by a live band.
Before visiting the United States, Pope Francis paid a visit to Cuba. Veteran journalist Ray Matikinya says the Roman Catholic Church has always played a leading role in conflict resolution, and therefore the leader of the Catholic Church has to be credited for the part he played in the thawing of relations between the two Cold War enemies.
Honestly, for a Pope to go to Cuba just after the Americans' relations with the Cubans are thawing, so it actually shows the part he played in making these negotiations and results come about. Credit must be given to Pope Francis.
Zimbabwe's Catholic Church has sent representatives to the United States to meet with the Pope and other Catholics from all over the world during the World Meeting of Families. In the meantime, all ears are on the ground as the Catholic Church waits for the papal message from the United States. Reporting for Studio 7 in Bulawayo, I'm Joseph Njanji.
Thanks, Joseph. Tatenda Kumbo reached out to Father William Guri, a Catholic priest based here in the United States, the state of Maryland, who says the visit by Pope Francis is a very special one.
The Pope, as you know, is the head of the Catholic Church all over the world, and he has got responsibility of every local church. And it is in place that he visits the church in this country like he should visit the church in any other country. But because, you know, there are so many countries and only one Pope, it becomes very special when he does get to the chance to visit a particular country.
The Pope will be focusing on varying issues. What's your take on some of the things that he will talk about, especially those that are focusing on issues of marriage, issues of what, for example, might be same-sex marriage, and then just general issues that are said to be on the agenda during his visit here in the country?
I heard the Pope respond to a similar question like that by saying, "I will say what the Holy Spirit tells me." He did not want to preempt what his statement will be on any of those particular and controversial issues. And we as Catholics have been looking really at the visit of the Pope as the event of faith that it is. There are issues that touch our faith lives that are controversial, that are debatable all over. But I think people are shying away from reducing the visit of the Pope to a particular issue. He's not coming here to read the Riot Act or make a pronouncement on a special issue, but basically to affirm the faith of the people in their struggles, strengthen them in their beliefs, and be in solidarity. He's very big on being with the people.
And Father Guri, what does this visit mean for Zimbabweans, in particular those of the Catholic faith that are based in the diaspora here in the United States?
It is very meaningful for Zimbabweans. I've been talking to a lot of Zimbabweans who are very, very excited about the Pope coming. As I said, the Pope is responsible for all the faithful in all the countries of the world, and it's impossible for him to go to every country in his lifetime. So when you get a chance to see the Pope, even if it is not in your country and you're Catholic, it's a great opportunity.
That was Father William Guri, a Catholic priest based here in the United States of the state of Maryland. He spoke with the reporter Tatenda Kumbo. Informal traders and Chitungwiza municipal police officers clashed this morning at Makoni Shopping Center in Chitungwiza, following attempts by the municipal police to evict the traders from various sites. Chitungwiza Residence Trust Director Mavela Skumalo says trouble started when about 15 baton-wielding officers descended on the informal traders in an attempt to destroy vending stalls, which the council claims were illegally built. But the traders fought back, resulting in two officers being injured. Studio 7 reached Chitungwiza Town Council spokesperson Zephania Mandirawe for comment, but he referred us to town clerk George Makunde, whose mobile phone was not reachable. Kumalo, however, tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri his organization is against the use of violence in solving problems.
The police officers went in there armed with baton sticks to forcefully evict the informal traders from their area of trading. But this did not go down well with most of the informal traders, leading to them attacking the municipal police officers. I witnessed the two municipal police officers, one male and another one, a lady. They were badly beaten by the informal traders, and I'm informed from their superiors, the municipal police superiors, that the two were badly injured.
Any arrests made?
As of now, I have not heard of any arrests.
As a trust, what are you encouraging both parties to do to address this issue amicably?
Our message to the informal traders is that the use of violence is not advised when trying to solve disputes. People should learn to sit down and solve whatever problems that might have arisen amicably. Then to the municipality, our message is they should sit down with the informal traders and the other interested stakeholders and map a way forward that is all-inclusive.
That was Chitungwiza Residence Trust Director Marvelous Kumalo speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. And now we take a look at regional and international news. German car manufacturer Volkswagen says 11 million cars worldwide were fitted with software that was designed to cheat US emission tests. European Union interior ministers are meeting in Brussels to discuss a controversial quota plan to distribute 120,000 migrants throughout the 28-nation bloc, but several countries remain opposed. A civil society network Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition yesterday launched its alternative economic blueprint called Zimbabwe Social Market Agenda for Recovery and Transformation, or ZIMSMART, which it says is a pro-poor document that can revive the ailing economy if implemented. The blueprint, which was launched at the Quill Club in Harare, proposes, among other things that have been proposed by others before, a sustainable strategy to deal with the country's debt, the reprioritization of government expenditure, the restructuring of state-owned enterprises, and rationalization of the size and structure of the government. The document that was unveiled by Crisis Director Pilan Zamchia also proposes taxation for reforms, promotes domestic investment, leveraging remittances from the diaspora, attracting foreign direct investment, FDI, and re-engaging the international community. For analysis, we reached the director, Rejoice Ngwenya, of Policy Dialogue think tank Coalition for Market and Liberal Solutions, who says the document is well-crafted, but implementation will be another thing.
It's an absolutely exciting document which has been penned and written by individuals with a lot of depth and a lot of passion, really. They do understand the nature of the things, the nature of the challenges that we are facing. But unfortunately, without a very clear implementation mechanism, both institutional, the human capital, the budgeting, the resourcing, time-bound, it becomes very difficult to see how it can be pushed forward.
But what can you say about the fact that it's written by Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, an organization that is at loggerheads with the government? So what's the point?
Well, it basically remains in the realm of intellectual debate and dialogue, because a policy document by nature is a document that should be consumed by a government. So if the government views, for instance, I know that the government views the Catholic Coalition as an enemy. They will probably dismiss it as one of those, Western indicated documents, because a think tank basically works hand in hand with public institutions in terms of implementation. But it is very unfortunate that the government is going to be dismissive about this document, because it's a brilliant way of getting citizens to participate and institutions to input into the way that the country is being run.
The document touts itself as a pro-poor economic blueprint. Do you think it does sufficiently address the needs of the poor?
Well, I would certainly not look at as a pro-poor document, because really I'm looking at it from a wealth creation viewpoint. If you create that much wealth using their blueprint, the poor will always benefit from this wealth that is created, a state that is able to accumulate resources using a private resource. So they call it pro-poor. I look at it just as another free market. I would say it's neoliberal, but to say pro-poor will be pandering to the whims of left of left ideology.
The document tries to address the issue of small to medium enterprises as being the backbone of the economy. And looking at the current situation where we have vendors being chased from the streets and things like that, do you think it will work?
The fallacy that SMEs in Zimbabwe can drive the economy, it now depends on how you describe an SME, because blue chip corporate companies that we know that create institutions that submit huge invoices to the national fiscus, that is huge human capital elements, with pension funds, with also medical benefits. Those are the institutions that create a huge middle income. I do agree that SMEs are very important, but really we are in a Marshall Plan scenario, and I believe that we should be arguing for a huge FDI rather than talking about vendors and workers who really eventually benefit downstream.
That was Rejoice Ngwenya, director of a policy dialogue think tank Coalition for Market and Liberal Solutions. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. For the first time since independence in 1980, President Robert Mugabe on Saturday gave his shortest speech ever at any function. Known for his long speeches, Mr. Mugabe at 91 showed signs of slowing down, speaking for just 15 minutes at the burial of national hero Sikhanyiso Ndlovu. Pictures of the event show Mr. Mugabe tightly gripping his wife Grace for physical support as he walked to the podium. This added to much speculation about his health, especially after reading the wrong speech in Parliament last week. The opposition says Mr. Mugabe should resign due to his advancing age and ill health, but his party has scoffed at the suggestions, insisting that he is going to represent the party in the 2018 presidential elections. We spoke to 85-year-old former educationist and writer Isaac Mpofu, who says at 91, Mugabe must retire.
Some nations believe in president for life, which personally I think is wrong. And some people think that there should be no limit to the time the president rules. But I think that one gets very old, like I am, for instance. I wouldn't like to rule at this age. It would be wrong. It's unfair to the people. It's unfair to the country. I'm a liability rather than an asset.
Would you think that someone, no matter how old they are, they can rule because they've got advisors?
No. Advisors, if I've got to be fair, in my opinion, advisors are always misleading because they always advise to their advantage.
That was Isaac Mpofu, a former educationist. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo. A delegation from China's Guangzhou city is in the country to finalize a twinning agreement with Harare City that will see the two cities cooperating in areas such as budgeting, governance, business, and infrastructure development. Ivan Chifera has details from Harare.
Speaking at a meeting to finalize the twinning agreement, Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni said the former Sunshine City stands to benefit from Gwanjong as it has many opportunities to offer, especially in terms of business. He said the fact that Gwanjong is more developed than Harare is a plus for the city that has so much to learn and develop.
They are solid on infrastructure, they are solid on waste management, housing and construction. Their financial centers are international hubs. So for a city like ours, in need of technical expertise, in need of funding, this is a great opportunity for us.
Manyenyeni said Zimbabwe is not going into the arrangement with a begging bowl in hand, but would want Gwanjong to exploit opportunities and invest in Harare. Leader of the Gwanjong delegation, Peng Menjiang, said the Harare arrangement is part of efforts by China to strengthen cooperation between the two countries.
We come and visit Zimbabwe and hope this time we can have more exchange between Gwanjong and Harare.
He said Gwanjong, as a city of more than 10 million, had a lot to offer Harare. He invited their counterparts in Zimbabwe to visit the Chinese city and explore opportunities. City residents like Maina Pengen said any arrangement that would improve service delivery was welcome. She said, with another Chinese company already upgrading the city's water reticulation system, she expected Gwanjong City to assist in other areas such as waste management that Harare seems to be grappling with.
There's a lot of dirt everywhere. Bins are left to overflow. If we could get help in such areas, I think the twinning program would be a success.
Harare Metropolitan Residents Association spokesperson Mavela Skumalo said while they would normally applaud any meaningful twinning arrangements between Harare and any other international cities, they were unhappy with the way the Chinese in particular have handled their deals with the Harare City Council.
It is suspicious because we have known those from the east to come to Zimbabwe and actually not work out on an equal footing, but treat Zimbabwe as a second fiddle country and actually benefit more instead of a 50-50 benefit.
Harare has twinning arrangements with cities like Munich of Germany that have seen massive capacity building programs being implemented and computer upgrading, resulting in improved water billing and revenue collection in the capital city. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The Zimbabwe Election Support Network, or ZESNES, urged the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to investigate reports of voter intimidation that it says were recorded in parliamentary by-elections last Saturday, resoundingly won by ZANU-PF. Studio 7's Ntunga Melinkomo speaks to ZESNES Programs Coordinator Ellen Kandororo Dingani.
On a positive note, we are happy to note that ZEC had adequate personnel, they had adequate voting materials, you know, things like indelible ink to mark the fingers of the voters. Even the voters' roll itself, it was there in all polling stations. So we really applaud ZEC for the procedures, which we felt that were conducted in a good way. But on another note, we realized that, for example, in Marondera Central, where they were doing pilot-based voting based on the pilot-based voter registration, we realized that they were using two voters' rolls. Because when we asked them, they said because some of the people had not come to register in the new politician-based voters' roll, they did not want to disenfranchise these people. But then our concern is around now their ability and also the confidence of the commission to implement this system at a bigger level. Do they have the capacity? This is just a worry that we have. And then the other issue that we noted was the issue of intimidation. We received the reports of voter intimidation, especially in Marondera, where political parties were allegedly recording serial numbers at the back of some registration slips of voters. This was a worrying concern that we noted.
And your recommendations henceforth?
I think in terms of recommendations, they just also come back to the issues that I've alluded to, issues of intimidation. We are calling ZEC to investigate these reports.
That was ZESN Programs Coordinator Ellen Kandororo Dingani on the line with reporter Ntunga Melinkomo from Harare. Now, a quick recap of today's top stories. Parliament resumed sitting today following last week's fracas, during which President Mugabe delivered a wrong speech. Pope Francis, the head of the Catholic Church, arrives in the United States tonight. And for Studio 7 Live Talk, remember, we are going to be talking about the youth and the Pope's message that they keep dreaming of a better future. That's Chris Gande for tonight. Good night.